Welcome to the MMA Roadshow, episode number 246 and a half. My name is John Morgan. Cole Coffee is not with me. That is because he is, I don't know what he's doing. I think he's kind of enjoying himself this afternoon. And I say afternoon because it is Sunday afternoon, December 15th. Normally, I like to do these things in the wee hours of the morning, kind of jumping on the instant reaction bandwagon and kind of reacting with the first things that come to mind and that feeling still fresh in the mind. But I got to be honest with you. Late last night, I was exhausted, man. It was a long, long day covering UFC 245 and, got there about 1 o'clock in the afternoon. Doors open at 2:15, so got there about 1 o'clock in the afternoon down there. Parked at the New York garage, walked down to T-Mobile Arena, hung out in the line for the media to get in, and then, of course, doors open at 2:15. First fight at 3:15, and then we went all the way through the night. I think by the time we left out of the media tent afterwards, it was 1:30 in the morning. Had a little bit more work to do after that. So it was just a long day. And I'm saying that all not to complain because I have the greatest job on earth, but to say that, I think if you tuned in for the main card only of this card, you might have been a little bit fatigued. I did talk to some people that watched it on TV afterwards. And I will say, even my wife was in the crowd as well. And she said, man, I loved it. It was a great night. Just felt the fights, kind of were slow paced at the end. And I know she didn't show up for the whole card. I know she had some other activities in the afternoon. I talked to some people that watched it on TV that only watched the main card as well. And I agree. You just had a lot of fighting, right? I mean, you did have two finishes on the main card, but they were in the final round. And then, of course, those three title fights, I thought each of those title fights had their own merit, and we'll definitely get into that. But when you're fighting a full five rounds for the first two and almost a full five rounds for the third, it just ends up making for, kind of a long night. And then, of course, they got the promos to run in between and commercials and, all the stuff they're running. And it seemed like kind of a slow pace. Now, the card as a whole, I thought was fantastic, man. It started out with a bang with Puna Soriano and that brutal knockout of Oscar Piojota. Puna making a incredible UFC debut, of course, the Contender Series product, and trains out here in Las Vegas at Extreme Couture. So a guy that we were real familiar with out here in the Las Vegas area. So it started great, and then there were a bunch of good fights, and we'll talk about some of them as we go. But, then it got into the main card, and I thought the main card was fun. I enjoyed it, but I can understand from a casual fan's perspective or just somebody that's, maybe worked a long day or had been hanging out all day. Just it ended up being a stretch. But still, some very, very important results on the way. And none bigger, of course, than Kamaru Usman picking up the fifth round TKO finish of Colby Covington. The grudge match settled, and Usman retains his undisputed welterweight title. To me, I thought this was a great fight. I was talking to some people next to me on Press Row that were actually a little bit disappointed, and I kind of understand it to a degree. These guys, what they're best known for is they're grappling. These are two elite-level wrestlers, and we didn't see a single takedown at all. And so from that perspective, I can understand the point that was being made by the gentleman that was seated next to me on Press Row. It was like, man, I just that's what they do best, and they didn't do it. And I can understand that. I can understand the disappointment of that. If that was the anticipation of what you really wanted to see, I completely get why you would think, man, we got robbed a little bit of seeing these guys at their absolute best. But I didn't feel that way. And I think a lot of it is just because, to me, there was such tension in this fight. I mean, we understand that Colby Covington has basically been playing a character all along. Take that however you will. He says it's just him turned up to 11. And I agree to a point, but I think he's definitely crossed some lines along the way. And I think this was a heated rivalry. It really, really was. And of course, for me, beyond it just being a heated rivalry, I mean, this is two incredibly great martial artists. And they went out there, and could we have maybe seen a more well-rounded approach by either one of them? Maybe. Maybe that would have made for, a little bit more quality display of martial arts. But I don't know, man. There was something special to me about these two guys just biting down on the mouthpiece and throwing down. You know what I mean? Because it wasn't like it was sloppy or unrefined. I mean, this is not old school mixed martial arts where the wrestlers have no idea what they're doing on the feet. To me, it was still incredibly intriguing. You know, Colby Covington's volume it remains impressive, and meanwhile, Usman's power was there. I mean, it was evident between the two which one was more powerful. And I had the fight 3-1 for Usman going into the fifth and final round. So for me, you know, he just had to hang on and win, and that's the way it worked. Would have worked out on the judges' cards as well. Eventually, I should say. Now, if you heard the story or saw it, because I think they mentioned on the broadcast was where it was first mentioned, but the scorecards did make their way around, and it was the 3-1 Kamaru Usman on one card. That was the Derek Cleary card. I believe that's exactly how I scored it. Round 1 to Covington, round 2-4 to Usman. Then you had it as well 2-2. And then you had it 3-1 the other way, Colby Covington. Now, and this is why that fifth round was so dramatic, because it did start out as a Colby Covington round. Covington did finally look to me to be fading a little bit, as did Usman, and rightfully so. Man, the pace was just relentless. It was insane. And Colby Covington came out and started the fifth round very well and was winning that round. But Usman turn the tide late in the round. And I think had it gone all the way to the end, you know, I think that Usman had that round in the bag. 50 seconds left. I mean, if it doesn't stop, I think Usman has that round in the bag. And if that's the case, he wins the split decision. 4-1, 3-2, 2-3. Now, had he not had that fifth round grit, that fifth round comeback, then, yeah, Colby Covington started out winning that round. And in that case, if it goes all the way to the judge's decision with Colby Covington, you know, doing what he did to start that round, then he wins the split decision. 4-1, 3-2, and 2-3. So, the stoppage to me, if you want to say it was controversial, that's okay. But please remember when you're arguing that, it probably didn't change the result of the fight. Unless you think Covington was mounting a dramatic comeback from off of the ground with 50 seconds remaining. If he was going to move from that turtle position and come back and do something, you know, a knockout, a submission, or something to steal that round back in his favor, then the stoppage being controversial really doesn't matter. So if you're going to have that argument, just remember what you're arguing. You're not arguing that you're going to change the result of the fight. So for me, it becomes less of a topic of discussion, less a point to even contend with. I didn't hate the stoppage. I could understand letting it go on maybe a little bit longer, but I do believe Mark Goddard is a fantastic official, and I trust in his decision-making. He, of course, has the best seat in the house, and you know, Covington was hurting very badly at that point. Kamaru Usman had turned it up, and he wins the fight. So, it turns out that Covington's jaw was broken. Of course, if you watched the broadcast, you heard it on the broadcast. Then afterwards, we had some conflicting reports. Dana White comes to the press conference. He says, yep, absolutely, the jaw was broken. Then immediately after the press conference is over, a USC official says, listen, we just got an update from the doctors. There was no break. And it's funny because at this point, the UFC team is like, hey, listen, we're out. You guys have this venue, the tent. At T-Mobile Arena, there's a big tent. There's no place for the media, so there's a big tent outside. So they said, listen, here's an update. There is no break. All right, is everybody good? Anybody else need anything else? No, you're good? All right, fine. Thank you, guys. Have a wonderful holiday season. We look forward to seeing you next year. You guys have this tent until 1:30 a.m., and then they'll start breaking down, and we'll see you later. At that point, the PR team all leaves, and we continue working in our spots. And then all of a sudden, a PR member comes back, and this is a few minutes later, out of breath, has been sprinting back to the media tent, to give us an update. I'm so sorry. And again, out of breath. So first things first, I'm going to be working out a lot more on the treadmill because I ran and I am exhausted now. No, there was a break on Colby Covington's jaw. And so there was some conflicting reports. So if you saw, you know, different things going back and forth on the results. That's why, because we were getting conflicting results in the media tent, and that was coming directly from USC officials. But the final word was, following an addendum medical report completed regarding Colby Covington, it has been determined that he has suffered a non-displaced midline mandible fracture. Now, I am not a doctor by any stretch of the imagination, but the mandible, of course, would be the jawbone. And I would imagine the non-displaced refers to the fact that there was a crack that didn't shift, hence maybe why there wasn't as much visual damage that we could see or that you could pick up on. And I imagine that's probably actually a better thing for him, too, in terms of healing. I guess maybe if it's non-displaced, you don't have to get screws or anything to hold it back in place. So I imagine that's better for him, although I do always hear when you break a bone and they put like a metal plate on it to keep it together, you can't ever break it there again. I would think a jaw would be a pretty solid place to have that. I know there's a couple fighters that have done that over the years. So anyway, I'm just going down that road because I want to say, listen, I think Colby Covington deserves some credit. I do. You know, I know that it's easy to pile on and say to hell with that guy, and I don't blame you. That some of the things he did along the way, we've talked about it, were indefensible. They were just absolutely indefensible. You know, his attack on Glenn Robinson and you know, saying that he was going to be watching the fight from hell. I mean, come on, man. You know, we saw the way that impacted his family, his surviving daughters. That's not cool. It's not cool at all. You know, the stuff of spoiling movies and stuff like that, it's pretty shitty. It's pretty shitty, I'll be honest with you. I know there's people that are huge fans of that stuff and can't wait, and that's their entertainment choice. And, you know, but whatever. That doesn't, to me, that's not indefensible. You know, but he has crossed the line. And the fact that, you know, he developed all these rifts in his own camp at American Top Team, I mean, that's rough. But listen, how long I have been seeing the praises of Colby Covington from the time he first came into the UFC, and I have been impressed by his skills, and he didn't get any attention, even though he had this incredible record. He got no attention until he started rubbing people the wrong way. And it sucks that that's what it took, but it is what it took. That is what it took, and it got him here. And I hope in this fight he displayed the skill, or at least people saw, because I know he displayed it, that people saw the skill that he possesses and that he is a fantastic mixed martial artist. And that doesn't mean you have to be a fan. It doesn't mean you have to say, you know what, I was wrong about this Colby Covington character all along. He is my new favorite fighter. No, I'm not saying that. But I think people were so dismissive of who he was as a fighter. And I just don't think you should do that, because he certainly showed once again why he's so talented. Now, as far as what's going to happen moving forward, you know, I think a lot of us thought, hey, you know, he got to this point, he had to use it, and he got to this point. Now, will he settle down a little bit? I don't know. I don't know. In the heat of battle, he sprinted out of the cage. By the way, nearly knocking over a couple people, not on purpose. That's supposed to be a clear walkway anyway, but there were some people that kind of weren't paying attention as he was sprinting by, and he nearly ran over a couple people. But he sprinted out of the cage. So no post-fight interview. Couldn't go to the press conference, of course, because he had to go get that jaw checked out. So, you know, no post-fight media from him. We did see him take to social media and blast Mark Goddard for the stoppage. Now, again, remember, maybe it was controversial, but if you look at the scorecards and the way that fifth round was going, the stoppage to me is kind of a non-issue. I don't think anything was happening in that last 50 seconds. I get it. MMA is the most unpredictable sport on the planet. Anything can happen. That's why we love it. But I don't think anything was happening in that last 50 seconds. And he did, you know, blast the fouls that were called, fouls that weren't called. So at least in the immediate aftermath, it looks like Colby Covington is still going to be this harsh, you know, difficult to deal with kind of person. I kind of hope that's not the case. I'm not saying he's got to come back and be a Boy Scout, but I hope that, you know, getting to the mountaintop and coming up just short, I mean, it was a great fight. Maybe these guys can run it back at some point. He pushed Usman to the limit. If Usman continues to have a dominant run, if he knocks off a couple top contenders, and Colby does the same, I don't see why you couldn't run this back at some point. And I don't think you have to keep up the the persona of being the most hated guy on the planet in the meantime. There still is the Covington Masvidal fight that might make some sense. Maybe not, since Covington lost, but if something happens to Masvidal and he loses, and he's, you know, he's looking for a fight, you know, the former roommates turned enemies, you know, training partners that now think horrible about each other. There's something to that. And of course, it's just an interesting stylistic matchup. So there's big fights available for Colby Covington, and I think he could challenge for a title again at some point as well. So it'll just be interesting to see how he handles himself at this point. I mean, he is 31 years old. He mentioned going to the WWE. You know, I don't know how much money he put in the bank for this, but I'm sure a couple more paydays wouldn't hurt along the way. So, but listen, I just hope there's a little bit of a change in the discussion of Colby Covington. Maybe not in defense of his antics. Again, you don't have to come out and defend what he does outside the cage, but I think there should be some recognition of who he is as a martial artist. And I thought UFC President Dana White summed it up pretty well, actually. I asked him about that in the post-fight press conference, and here's what he had to say.
Well, Dana, you mentioned the Colby Covington broken jaw there. We were wondering about that. I mean, listen, I know you're not a fan of that guy or haven't necessarily gotten along with him, might I, but did he show the world something tonight?
100%. I mean, going into this fight yesterday, I was doing interviews, and I told everybody, man, I said, listen, don't let all the bullshit and stupid talk overshadow the fact that this kid is tough, talented, and stylistically this fight is unbelievable. If you look at the stats, they line up perfectly, and the question was Covington's cardio, and you know, he has unstoppable cardio. Could Usman keep up with that, and how would Covington deal with the power of Usman? Only one way to find out, and now we know.
All right, so that is Dana's thoughts on Colby Covington, and I tend to agree with him. You don't have to love the guy at this point, but I do think there needs to be at least a small amount of respect for who he is as a martial artist, and I think that clouded people's judgments along the way. All right, now let's turn our attention to the man that won the fight, Kamaru Usman. I thought this was a great performance. You know, I thought there were some ebbs and flows to the fight. Again, I like this fight. You know, is it one that, you know, I'm putting up there in terms of all-time classics and, man, we need to watch this one over and over and over? No. But I thought there was drama. I thought there was tension. I thought there was courage in the ebbs and flows and how the things worked out. And Usman did what he said he was going to do. You know, he said, I'm going to, you know, and I'm not saying that he, you know, carried anything along the way, but he said going in, look, I want to hurt this guy for 4.5 rounds, and then I want to finish him. And, man, if that isn't exactly what he did. You know, he delivered on the promises. And, you know, I thought Usman deserved a lot of credit for the buildup along the way. You know, he didn't let himself get sucked in. It certainly weighed heavy on him, the tension between these two, and just, you know, what was at stake. You know, I think Usman did respect Covington as a martial artist. He didn't overlook the skills that were there. And I think that's easy to do, to just look at the character and not look at the fighter. And I don't think Usman did that. You know, I think he knew the challenge that he was in for, and he delivered on it. And, man, the guy's just on a nice run right now. He really is. And he says, listen, I think I'm the best in the division for a reason. You know, I think my work ethic, my focus is there. And, man, I thought this was a gutsy performance. You know, he comes out with the phenomenal performance over Tyron Woodley back in March. A lot of people want to say Tyron, you know, didn't look that good, and maybe he had an off night, but, you know, and there's probably some fairness to that. But I mean, now if you're talking about, you know, once Usman was competing with the elite level, you're talking about a dominant decision over Damian Maia, a dominant decision over Rafael Dos Anjos, a dominant decision over Tyron Woodley, and then a hard fought close fight but got the finish against Colby Covington. So I know that it's funny because Usman's had his critics along the way, and a big portion of those came from, of course, after the win over Emil Mech. You know, he told me backstage, you know, that was me at 30%, and man, did people latch on to that comment. You know, and I don't think he meant it as he was making an excuse, but I understand what people are saying, like why they didn't like it. But man, since then, I don't see how you can be critical of the way the guy's handled himself. And I thought, you know, mentally he showed a lot of strength coming into this fight, dealing with all the buildup. You know, the face-offs that they had, the times that they interacted, you know, they weren't. He just didn't let Covington get in his head. And I think that was well done on his part. So a big win for him defending his title. And now you kind of look at what's next. You know, Dana White afterwards, I asked him about the possibility of a Masvidal and Usman fight. And he said, listen, I think that would be huge. I wasn't sure if the UFC was going to like that as much just because, you know, the Masvidal-Covington angle for the belt would have been insane. I don't know if Masvidal Usman is, and I did see that Abe Kawa, Masvidal's manager, has already come out on social media and said, listen, we don't know if that's the biggest fight available right now for us, you know, as Masvidal's team. So, you know, we'll see what's on the table. Does he want to sit and wait for what happens with Cowboy and Connor? I mean, probably not a bad idea. You're only talking about a month, and it's a month that's the holidays anyway. Why do you got to plan anything right now? It looks like the UFC's got their main events all the way through the first part of April. So sitting back and waiting a little bit and seeing if that Conor McGregor fight is on the table after the Cowboy fight, maybe not a bad idea. That might be what they're referring to. But Dana White did say clearly that he thought it was a good fight and a big potential fight. So it's at least on the table. But I wanted you to hear from Kamaru Usman as well, because well-deserved, he should have his few minutes to shine as well. Here's his discussion to me at the post-fight press conference and his thoughts on the idea of a Masvidal matchup. I did ask him what his take on that was.
Congratulations on obviously a very, very big result for you tonight. I know you said that, look, he didn't get under your skin and it didn't bother you and that sort of thing, but this was a very kind of heated build-up all along. I wonder, you know, how much sweeter it is to be the result over that guy, or is it just the fact that you've got this title defense under your belt?
What's up, everybody? Thank you guys for being here. To answer your question, it was good to it's good to move past all of that. I'm going to be honest. This was what kept me sane all 6-7 months. Whenever this fight, I knew this fight was going to happen. This is what kept me sane, is this moment right here after the fight. That's what I look forward to. This is the addictive moment. This is what keeps me doing this. Yeah, there was a lot emotionally, a lot that he said. This one, and I meant it, this one's for the world. This one's for the people of Brazil. This one is for my former manager. This one is for my family. This one's for my man and my recent manager. This one is for everybody. And, you know, when you push hate and you push separation, you know, love and unity does win sometimes. And tonight it won.
Back and forth, ebbs and flows in this fight. The fifth round, he actually started out pretty well in that fifth round. And the scores were all over the place. I'm sure you've probably heard by now, 3-1 one way, 1-3 the other, 2-2. So I'm just curious, because it seemed like something changed in that fifth round that you were able to snag momentum and then get the finish. Was there a physical moment that you saw or a mental moment that you had that you said, I got to go?
You know, I try not to ever lose a round, which is why I've been dominant, you know, since the beginning of my career. I think in there, I'm self-made. I mean, my mind, no one has to tell me what I need to do mentally. I do this for the sheer fact of me competing. And, you know, everyone, all since this fight got signed, all this Colby's gas tank has got a crazy gas tank. My motherfuckers, I got a gas tank too. What are y'all talking about? You know, and once we got in there, after that third round, I'm looking across. I'm barely breathing hard. And I'm like, where's this gas tank at? Everybody's talking about this gas tank. Where's this gas? I was actually waiting for him to wrestle, but I knew that he knew if he wrestled with me, he was going to gas out, and I was going to knock him out a lot quicker than that. Tyron Woodley has better accolades wrestling than he does, and you saw what happened in that fight. He knew he couldn't wrestle with me, and striking with me, and that was his best chance, and, you know, we saw what happened there.
Probably no surprise, he didn't love the stoppage, but I'm not anybody that loses.
Oh, he didn't?
He didn't, but what did you think? I mean, you're right there on top of it. Tell us what you saw and what you thought of the stoppage.
Oh, he was leaking underneath there. He was hurt bad. You know, he was trying to hang on to a leg. As a wrestler, if you're underneath someone, you want to hang on to a leg. and he wasn't even on a leg. That's why I was landing free shots to the, you know, right behind the ear. I was landing them. And, you know, great stoppage by Mark Goddard. That's why he's one of the best referees out there. You know, he's there to protect you even though you're dumb enough to not protect yourself. So
I know you're going to take some time and enjoy this moment for sure. This is a big result for you, but we always are looking to what's next. There's a guy in your division that's become a huge star this year in Masvidal. Do you think that's the name that makes sense for you most right now, or what do you see next for yourself?
Who?
Masvidal.
Man, there's a lot of tough guys in the division. A lot of tough guys. I mean, let's be honest. You know, if you're talking about someone who's deserving, Leon Edwards hasn't lost since he fought me. He's been finishing guys. And he's now found himself in the position that I found myself in a little over a year ago. Is everyone knew that I was one of the toughest guys out there, and they didn't want to gamble and take that risk on me. And so, you know, right now I'm sitting above looking at all these guys, and they're kind of, you know, all in that pool, very tightly, you know, contested. So, you know, they just need to break out. And, you know, I'm waiting for whoever Dana and the organization feel is the next guy for me, and I'll be happy. I never turned down a fight. You know, and especially now I'm the champion. And so if they say this is the next guy, then hey, that's the next guy. But, you know, I need to go home. I need to love on my daughter. You know, this has taken a lot. You know, my family's been through a whole lot, and I've been through a lot mentally. You know, but of course, this is what champions do. We block it out, and we come out, and we perform.
All right, so big things happen in that welterweight division, but the grudge match is settled, at least for now. Co-main event, Alexander Volkanovski did pick up a hard-fought unanimous decision over Max Holloway, 48-47, 48-47, and 50-45. I saw scores all over the board. I did have it 48-47 for Alexander Volkanovski, so I thought he executed enough to win this fight. I did see while the 50-45 might sound a little outlandish, I did see some media scores of 50-45 on Twitter, as everybody was kind of posting what they had. I thought it was a little closer at 48-47, but I did not think that there was controversy here. And I think if you look at MMADecisions.com, which of course is a fantastic website. I love all the tracking that they do there. But it looks like every single scorecard was turned in for Volkanovski. So Max Holloway said after the fight that he thought he had done enough to win. And he didn't get destroyed by any stretch of the imagination, but I thought Alexander Volkanovski went in there, executed the game plan very well. The leg kicks obviously ended up being a huge part of his offense, and Max Holloway's lead left leg was beat up pretty bad early on. Man, you could see the kind of welts developing on it, and he switched to southpaw, and had some success there, but had the leg chewed up there as well. So. Found it tough, and punches as well. Volkanovski, big hooks. You know, I think Max Holloway's straight punches were a little bit faster at times, but overall, you know, just a fantastic effort by Alexander Volkanovski. Stuck to the game plan the entire time, executed it. And listen, I've said all along, I've always been a big fan of Alexander Volkanovski as well, and his confidence and his self belief, and that is, I've said it a million times, that is something you can't fake. You can sense it when you're around people enough. You can sense people that believe wholeheartedly, truly in themselves. And Volkanovski is one of those guys. And by the way, for the record, if you're just curious, I had 1, 3, and 5 for Volkanovski. So to me, I still had it up for grabs going to that fifth and final round. But Alexander Volkanovski, that gas tank is there. It's problematic. You know, the wrestling, Max Holloway proved. Defensively, he made the wrestling pretty much ineffective. So I didn't think Max Holloway fought bad. I just think the leg kicks maybe kind of slowed his movement down a little bit. And I thought the output, wasn't necessarily always there. And he certainly didn't really hurt Alexander Volkanovski. So to me, this was a good fight. It was a tactical fight. But, we started out talking about how this night may have kind of worn on to some people. I get it. If the tension here meant a lot to me. I watching Alexander Volkanovski's rise has been incredible. You know, undefeated in the UFC, you look at the run that he's now on. I mean, in a row consecutively picking up wins over Chad Mendes, Jose Aldo, and Max Holloway. I mean, And hell, if you want to add Darren Elkins into that run, I mean, he's beat more than that. But, you know, again, once you reach that elite tier, and I get it, perhaps, you know, Aldo's on the downswing. Perhaps Mendez was on the downswing. You know, he certainly, you know, he retired after that. But that's an impressive resume right there to pick up those three consecutively. So I have no issue with Alexander Volkanovski being the UFC featherweight champion. I thought he did what he had to do here. And, you know, I like the idea of a rematch. You know, I asked Dana White about it, and he brought it up all, you know, right away. He said, yep, I like the idea of a rematch. Let's do it, you know. And, of course, he always says, look, we're not matchmaking right after. Things happen. Of course, injuries happen. So don't consider that a booking or anything like that. But, again, injuries happen. Schedules happen. Whatever. Things happen. Maybe Max Holloway moves to lightweight. You know, there's a possibility of that. He didn't rule that possibility out either. You know, he's, of course, that last fight didn't go his way when he moved up to 155 pounds, but it's not as if he wasn't competitive. And he is getting older, and guys get bigger and that sort of thing. But the idea of a rematch down in Australia, don't think it would be an Etihad Stadium type show, but, you know, going to, what is it, Rod Laver Arena in Melbourne? Is it Acer Arena still in Sydney, you know, one of those. I mean, maybe even go to you know, one of the other cities out there. I mean, I would think one of the two big key cities would be the one that would host it, you know, championship fight, but you never know. But doing it down there would be pretty cool. I think Max Holloway deserves some respect for his run and, you know, deserves that opportunity for a rematch if it's what he wants. Done doubting Alexander Volkanovski. Hopefully, I did end up picking him, man. It's funny. I was going to pick him going in, and that's no slight to Max Holloway, but I've just been so impressed by Alexander Volkanovski. And then I turned my staff picks in for MMA Junkie, which, by the way, 5-0 this week. I'll just pat myself slightly on the back for that. But I turned my pick into MMA Junkie, and I was in a rush, and I copied and pasted wrong. And actually turned my pick in as Max Holloway, and I was like, well, damn it, I meant to pick Volkanovski, but maybe that's a sign there. Maybe that's fate trying to step in for me. But at the last minute, I did say, no, the idea was Volkanovski. Give me Volkanovski. So went with Alexander Volkanovski, and he did get the win. So, yeah, I just well executed, and I get it. I could see people not necessarily being thrilled by this fight. To me, it was tactical. It was tense. And now we got to see what's next. Again, I do think that the rematch is right. I'm sure Brian Ortega is probably pretty excited about this development. That opens up an opportunity for him to get in the mix. Of course, Zabit Magomedsharipov is there as well, right in the mix behind them. You know, if you look at the MMA Junkie rankings, we still have Jose Aldo at featherweight. We were just waiting for the bantamweight fight to happen. That'll be a discussion I have with George Garcia. I think we move Aldo to bantamweight. You know, he fought there, and he says, I want to make a title run at bantamweight. So sometimes we'll have a wait-and-see approach with guys to see if it's a one-off. But, you know, Jose Aldo, even though he came up short, which we'll talk about momentarily, I think he's staying at bantamweight. So he's exiting the division. We saw Frankie Edgar at featherweight as well. Again, we wait on that bantamweight clash to happen. He's got two fights scheduled on the horizon, so we'll see what happens there. But to me, you know, Brian Ortega and Zabit Magomedsharipov, both very, very relevant in the featherweight rankings, but I think we end up going with a rematch first. That would just be right to me. That would be the respect, I think, that Max Holloway earned through his title run. But listen, we did get a chance to speak briefly with Alexander Volkanovski. I'll share my couple of questions with him at the post-fight press conference with the new champ, Alexander Volkanovski.
Alex, congratulations on your victory. Of course, you've been saying from the beginning you belonged here. This was going to happen. You've talked about it. But give me an idea as the fight is unfolding and you're putting rounds in the bank and things are playing out. Can you tell me kind of mentally what's going through your mind? Is there this realization like this is going to happen?
Man, it was a tough one for me. Again, I stay so composed in there. I've got a job to do, right? When I'm in there, and that, I've always said that, I keep myself so level-headed and composed. So going through, I was just taking every round and talking to them. I'm going, how's it going? They're going, it's going good, it's going good. So, you know, I thought it was reasonably close. Obviously, I thought I was winning, but I didn't know. But my corner were done a really good job of letting me know that and not getting caught up into his game. And as the round's gone, they're telling me to keep doing what I'm doing. So I've got full faith in them. Game plan was working well. My shins are a little sore, but, you know, the game plan went well. So it was good. Again,
I was saying, like, you know, we're both very high level. You know, it was a chess match in there. And, yeah, I got the job done.
Clear, the leg kicks did play a huge part in it tonight. I mean, can you mention, I mean, was that a primary focal point of the game plan, or did it just turn out that it was effective and you kind of leaned heavy on it?
Oh, it was always going to be a part of it, always going to be a part of the game plan. But, I mean, there was other things that was happening there as well. So, but, again, as Dana just said, there might be a rematch, so I can't give it too much away, can I? But, I mean, look, obviously my coaches and that done a good job of they done research, not only of things that work well against him, things that he done really well. A lot of people keep asking me about, oh, yeah, with Poirier, he done this, you know, these are things that you've seen him do that you could use. I'm like, yeah, we've seen stuff, but we're seeing things that Max winning, we've seen why he's winning, like things that work really good for him, you know, when we look that deep. And yeah, like I said, we think we've got a formula, and I've got that style as well. So when he really wanted to pour it on, I was just getting out of range, or I'd let him run into some of my shots. And then obviously them leg kicks were there, and that gas tank, I've got the gas tank. We were sitting there talking in there. I was like, hey, we're both fresh in there, like, you know what I mean? So again, there's a couple of little mental and physical games in there, but I mean, it was good fun, you know what I mean? I got it done. Yeah. We got it done.
You said you weren't sure what the score was. Eugene was. He was yelling at the judges, they better not mess it up, they better not mess it up. So can you tell me what was going through your head as you're waiting and you finally get your hand raised, you accomplish what you've been chasing for a long time? What was that time like?
Yeah, it was, again, I got all my trust in my corner, and they're telling me, going, look, you know, you got Eugene saying it's a whitewash. I got my head coach, Joe Lopez, telling me you got this. You know, Brad Riddell telling me you got this. I'm like, all right, we got this. But again, I still thought I won the fight, but I mean, you know, I'm my hardest critic. That's the thing, you know what I mean? If I get punched in the face, I'm like, you know what I mean? I don't like it, you know what I mean? I look at it as, damn, you got me, you know what I mean? If you look at a lot of my fights, I don't get touched much. So my face, you can see I got touched a little bit here, but I mean, it was, again, he's a great champion. You know, obviously it was never going to be an easy fight, but I said I was the guy to do it. And, you know, again, I'm not cocky, but I'm confident, and I got a job done. And, you know, there was a lot of doubters there. I think that I ended up looking at a pros picks. Not one of them picked me. Not one. But I use that as motivation. I love it. They'll pick me next time.
Nice. And last thing for me, you touched on it. Dana mentioned the rematch, and he seemed to say, not that it's a certainty, but he said it just made a lot of sense. And I think with what Max has accomplished, it probably does. I mean, do you agree? Do you feel like you should have to beat him again? Or do you feel like there's other things on the table that might make sense?
I think he deserves it. Like, do I have to beat him to prove that I'm a better fighter? I think, like, we had 5 rounds to do it, and I'm pretty sure I won it pretty clearly. But anyway, if people are still going to doubt, you know, they're still going to. But again, I'll be ready for it, and he does deserve it. And, you know, that'll make for a big fight. And, yeah, I'm down. Of course I'm down. Again, I'm the guy to do that, and I'll be better prepared the next time. You know, I know what we know what works. We're going to get an even better formula. So, you know what I mean? He might think he'll get me figured out again, but I'm just too powerful, man. Like, they go one way, I go another. You know what I mean? That's the thing. Like, I'm so well-rounded. I could just go anywhere with it. If he was really fixing me up on the feet and I had to grind it, like, you know, look for takedowns, I could always go there. You know what I mean? That's the thing. I got so many ways to go. Even striking, there's so many ways to go. So I proved that. Again, he's good with his range. It was like, how's he going to handle the range? It was like, that's how.
Alex, right in front of you here, just one question. What at your biggest, what did you weigh? Like, what were you at your most?
Yeah, I'll make that clear. 214 pounds. I remember, because I've done the math, I was 97 kilograms, and I've done the maths, about 214 pounds. So I remember yeah, going at doctors, I looked at that, and I was like, oh, damn. So that was probably one of the heaviest that I was. So 215, that's pretty big. But I fought my first, like, 4 amateur fights, and that at middleweight. Then my first, like, 3 or 4... a professional at welterweight, and then work my way down. So I had my first loss at welterweight a long time ago, and that opened my eyes and made me realize, all right, stop fighting these big boys. But I reckon I'm ready to move up again anyway. Nah.
I mean, you're being an elite athlete, I'm sure you don't have a lot of body fat at that point. So how actually were you able to pull that off, to get that weight off, to be still as athletic as you became, you know, dropping that much muscle? I'm sure you had to drop muscle out of there.
Oh, there was some fat there, I'll be honest. There was definitely, I wasn't at the highest level, I didn't play like NRL, but you know, it was professional still, rep sides and stuff like that, but I was thick. I was short and thick. Remember, I'm 5'6", so you could imagine, my head was huge. As I said, like, my head was bigger than this bloody belt, I'm telling you. But, again, I lost a lot of size. Again, I was thick. I'm always thick. As you can see, I'm still thick. But, yeah, no, it come down slowly. Obviously, I lost a little bit of muscle, but I lost a lot of fat.
Alex, we spoke on Media Day right over here in the center, and I asked you about the fact that online as well as media, people were talking about the length of Max and how that could present problems and how are you going to get by that. You were very passionate and insistent about that not being a problem, I remember, so much so that I said, man, I think I believe him, even though a lot of people weren't believing in you. Did that,
believe me now?
I think I do, okay. Yes. Did it present a problem at all? It looked like, for the most part, you were quite comfortable in there, but on occasion, he was keeping you at a distance. How did that work out?
Of course, yeah. Obviously, he's really good at his distance. But again, like that's his game, right? So he's going to make me miss a little bit. You know, I'll still make him miss, but I mean, at the same time, that's what I mean. Again, I can't give too much away, but you know, there was times where I started getting a little bit careless, and then my corner had to pull me up a little bit, and then snap back to it. So again, there's things that he does really well, but we're aware of him. We're ready. So you know, if the rematch has to happen, again, he cuts a lot of weight. Does he want to stay in this division? I don't know. He probably wants to get that back. I don't blame him. You know, again, I got nothing but respect for the guy. But it's my time. It's the blessed era ends tonight in the featherweight division. He's a big boy, but I mean, again, if he wants to do it again, we could do it in Australia, and let's sell some seats and tickets and pay-per-views.
Was there anything he did that surprised you tonight?
I wouldn't say. Oh, he went to the body a little bit more than I thought he would. But I mean, again, look, we knew like he was going to still look at that jab. We still knew he was going to just stay out of range and things like. Again, I can't give too much away, but he done some things well. But I mean, again, even though I'm missing, like, you know, these are still things that are calculated and I'm still aware of and stuff like that. So again, I can't give too much away. But if I miss, I know I miss, and I can use that to my advantage for the next time. So for the next punch, you got what I mean? Again, people look too much into just the what's that? It's hard to explain. Again, I'm going too deep. But I mean, hey, there's levels to this. We both had a little chess match in there. I come out on top and I'm the champ.
Last question, would you really prefer that your next fight be a rematch, or is there someone else you might be interested in fighting?
Man, I said I'll be a great champion just like the other guys. I'll fight whoever deserves it. And, like, let's be honest, Max is a great champion. He was a great champion, sorry. You know, he was fighting all the guys. He gave me, again, my shot was earned, not given, but he gave it to me. You know, he could have been looking around and doing other stuff, but he was happy. You know, a lot of people, there was people saying that I was going to give him problems. He's like, bring it on. Good on him. He's a champion. I respect him for that, and I plan on doing the same. So the people that are next in line, let's do it. And he does deserve a rematch, I reckon he does. But right now, I'm going to soak it up. Spencer, you know, I get a Christmas present, early Christmas present back to my family. You know, I'll go there, celebrate, you know, have a holiday with them, and let's, we'll talk business.
But wait, there's more. Two title fights, not enough. No, there were three title fights. Amanda Nunes did defend her women's bantamweight title over Jermaine Duranemi. Listen, I think we said it coming in. Jermaine Duranemi doesn't get enough credit for who she is as a fighter. And I think she showed her toughness here. You know, I think she showed her skills. She had moments on the feet. And she said, look, Amanda will not stand with me. And for the most part, she was right. Amanda didn't want to stand with her. And rightfully so. You know, Amanda said, listen, why would I stand with her? You know? She's this legit kickboxer that's been doing it her entire life. You know, I started in grappling. I'm just learning to strike. And I think we forget that sometimes. Amanda Nunes has had these highlight reel knockouts, so we think of her as a knockout artist. And she is, to a degree. She's super powerful. But, you know, she started as a grappler. And she used that to her advantage. She did find herself in some trouble on the ground briefly, or at least what looked like trouble with Jermaine Duranemi, the triangle choke that turned into an arm bar, and it looked to me like, you know, there was some tension there, but Amanda says, nah, it was really, really not that bad. Of course, I guess it's about 50-50. Sometimes fighters go, yeah, it was pretty close, but it seems like for the most part, it's like, nah, I was never in any trouble. Like, were you? Were you not in any trouble at all? But listen, another big win for Amanda Nunes. I think she's fighting on a different level right now. It was never any disrespect to Jermaine Duranemi. I think Jermaine Duranemi deserves more respect than she gets. Handled herself with dignity and class. She's always such a fun person to be around. Big smile on her face. Her and Amanda were cordial all week long. It was about a martial arts contest. And Amanda just proved herself the better fighter. You know, and I don't know if there's a ton to take out of it. I thought she fought a smart game plan, stuck to the game plan, even though I'm sure, you know, she was frustrated a little bit. There were some boos and a little bit of frustration. Because Jermaine, unfortunately, you know, once she's on the ground, her kind of go-to, while she did threaten with the submission, her go-to is kind of just hold and hope for a restart. And that is one thing that I am not a fan of. Like, you've got to have some sweeps. You've got to have some escapes. Just holding tight and holding for a restart, to me, that's inadequate. It is. And so, you know, if there's criticism to be lobbied of Jermaine Durand, that would be it to me. I'm just not a fan of anyone whose primary method of getting out of, you know, a takedown is to hold on and wait for the ref to stand you up. So I would like to see some more movement from there. But on the feet, she's super dangerous, and that's why Amanda didn't want to spend any time there. But Amanda operating on a different level right now. She's got a phenomenal win streak put together. Now, here's the interesting part. What comes next? Now, it is funny because, you know, she's got two belts, but she actually has two different belts, right? She's still got the old school belt because that's the women's featherweight title that, you know, I don't know that there's anybody really for her to defend it against right now, right? I mean, there's nobody necessarily at 145 for her to fight. You know, you go to the MMA Junkie rankings, we of course have Amanda Nunes at number one at both featherweight, bantamweight, and pound for pound. Cyborg is number two. She's now gone to Bellator. Julia Budd, number three. She's the Bellator champion, of course. Felicia Spencer is there, but she's coming off a loss. Megan Anderson, you know, the longtime you know, choice, I think, to fight for the title, but she had that setback against Felicia Spencer. Now, she came back and got a win over Zara Farron, but I don't know if one win is enough for her to get in there. So, and then a lot of the next, you know, top-ranked 145ers are all in Bellator. So, it's funny because I think Amanda Nunes might be carrying around that second old-school title for quite some time. Now, at 135, there's more talent for sure. But now, especially, it's a little bit confusing. Ketlin Vieira was kind of known as the de facto number one contender. She was kind of waiting and biding her time. She had some injuries. She comes back from the injuries, and she loses to Irina Aldana in, I mean, emphatic fashion. Now, I thought Vieira was starting out well, and I guess we could just go ahead and jump to this because it does make some sense. This was on the prelims. But, you know, I thought Ketlin Vieira was fighting well. But Irina Aldana, you know, we talked about her going. I think she's really been putting things together. And she showed it here, man. And she had the big knockout and, you know, dramatic scene afterwards, man. Ketlin Vieira, once she came to, I mean, she was in absolute tears. I mean, hard for her to be in that position, to lose her undefeated records, you know, to be knocking on the doorstep of a title shot and to have that taken away and to have it taken away in dramatic fashion like that. Yeah, man, rough. But Irina Aldana, I think she's too far down the list right now. Now, stylistically, you know, a boxer, you know, but again, she works hard. She's trying to get better, the defensive wrestling, that sort of thing. I think she may have some of the same problems that Jermaine Durandamy did against Amanda Nunes if she were to get that opportunity. But she's definitely working towards it. But I think she's a little too far down the list right now. So, you know, you've got Aspen Ladd in there, who has come back since the loss. You know, Juliana Pena is now a name that's back in the mix. So, I mean, there are a couple names, but there's none that just jump out at you. So people started looking at other options. And again, you know, these boxing crossover fights aren't always the most entertaining. I mean, sometimes it's just exhausting. Like, oh, come on, man. Like, Masvidal, I love you, but Canelo is not going to fight you. You know, I mean, just stuff like that. You know, sometimes it's exhausting. I know from our MMA Junkie staff, I can tell you that people get pretty worn out with it. But this one, I think, you know, Amanda Nunes doesn't have a lot of, you know, immediately available, sensible fights. And so, you know, there's this conversation coming up with Clarissa Shields, the two-time Olympic champion boxer, who, by the way, is heavier than Amanda Nunes and has never fought, I want to say within like, 157, I think, is the lowest that she's ever fought. I was talking to Kevin Ioli a little bit last night. Of course, Kevin Ioli, an expert in the boxing field as well, so I was gleaning his knowledge and his thoughts on it. And brought it up briefly. I mean, it does seem like something that UFC President Dana White is interested in, but it does not even a little bit sound like something Amanda Nunes is interested in. So here's what she had to say about the night at the post-fight press conference, as well as her thoughts on Clarissa Shields.
Here we go once again. And still.
Well, Amanda, you didn't get the big finish tonight, you know, that you've become known for, but it was a very, very impressive victory for you, very dominant. Give us your thoughts right now on how you performed tonight.
It was awesome. Every time that I fight five rounds, I get better the next fight. You know, that was the strategy, was taking her down. I know she's dangerous. She's doing this forever, you know. She's striking forever. I just learned striking. I'm a grappler, and I did what I was supposed to do tonight.
Is it difficult for you to remain like in that focus and stick to the game plan? Because you do have these highlight reel finishes. Is there a part of you that wants to go in there and just throw down with her and see what happens?
Honestly, this fight, I wanna just fight to go for five rounds. That was the strategy. Take her down and dominate her five rounds. It was exactly what I did.
The only real tense moment we thought was the triangle to the arm bar when she rolled over. Can you just let us know, I guess, how tight was either the choke or the arm?
No, that was tight at all. She had big legs, and she always be able to put it behind, but I know soon I roll, I will get out.
And going five hard rounds like that, I know it makes it tough to turn around, but you said you wanted to defend this belt right after. So right now, before you know how your health is and everything, what sounds good to you is when to fight again?
I don't know. We're gonna relax a little bit, you know, fix this boo-boo here and come back soon.
All right, last thing for me, Amanda. I couldn't help but notice Clarissa Shields was walking around here this week. She was at the weigh-ins. She was here tonight. She seems to think that a series of boxing and MMA with you.
She saw tonight. I think she's not going to want anything to do with this.
No? What about you? Is it something you want?
If she want to see me, come to my ward. I'm going to be here. I'm an MMA fighter. If she want to see me, I'm going to wrestle this shit out of you and finish you with a jiu-jitsu submission. I want to see how she's going to feel that.
All right, so three championship fights. Again, did make for kind of a lengthy evening, but certainly some meaning in all of those. And we'll see what happens next in those divisions. All right, Marlon Moraes picked up a split decision win over Jose Aldo. And I have to say, first and foremost, I guess, let me just say, I think I was wrong about Jose Aldo. I mean, we didn't try to play doctor ahead of time or pretend that we knew anything more than anybody else. You know, we said, look, we can't even see the guy, at media day, other than he's got this hoodie on, but his face just looks incredibly sunk in. And then he comes to the official weigh-ins, and he actually had a little pep in his step. And then, ceremonial, same thing. And I got to say, the guy looked good. The guy looked really good at bantamweight. Moved well. I thought, fatigue wasn't an issue late in the fight. Seemed to still be having the same pace. Power was there. I thought Jose Aldo, looked better than I thought he would. Now, is this, killer Jose Aldo of prime, WEC, horror show? No, it's not. But it's still a very capable Jose Aldo. And I'll be honest, I thought he won this fight over Marlon Moraes. I thought Marlon, to me, at times, was a little bit too tentative. And I think, probably that had to do a lot with the respect that he had for Aldo coming in, as well as the respect that Aldo earned along the way. But Marlon did take home the split decision win. And one benefit, I guess, of doing this the next morning instead of doing it immediately after, like we normally do when we knock out a 1.5 episode, was I got a chance to go back and actually watch that third round. And I'll be honest, at the time, I didn't think it was a robbery, and I still don't think it was a robbery. But I think in watching that third round a second time, I think I still believe that Jose Aldo won that round. It's close, so I'll concede that, but I would have conceded that to you at the time as well. That's just what happens when the output of a round, is, and you're picking by a punch or two here or there. It's going to be close, and I hate the term robbery. But I did think that Jose Aldo won this fight. And so I guess because of that, you know, he deserves some respect in what he wants to do next at the bantamweight division. He was incredibly emotional leaving. Classy in the cage, but you could tell he was fighting back the emotions a little bit. He lost it on the way back to the locker room, and he covered his face with his T-shirt. And pulling up again that trusty resource, MMADecisions.com, it looks like it's split right down the middle. 29-28 Moraes, 29-28 Aldo. It looks like, what, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 cards for Moraes. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, yeah, 9 cards for Aldo. It is split right down the middle from the 18 cards that they tracked. So, you know, I guess unfortunate, close, and I don't have a problem necessarily with the decision, even though I saw it the other way. Now, what I do have a problem with, and I'll just be candid about this, is that Dana White afterwards said, you know, Cejudo reached out to him and said, I think Jose Aldo won that fight. I want to fight him. I do get it from Cejudo's perspective. He knows he doesn't have a ton of time in the sport. He's trying to take out the biggest names possible, create the biggest legacy for himself, and I understand that. But to me, I don't understand how you can overlook Petr Yan. I don't think that's right. I understand Jose Aldo has all these accolades, former WBC champ, former UFC champ. Of course, all of that was contested in another division. I get it. You owe certain people kind of earn the right to be granted things. I mean, people, I think, sometimes get frustrated at the way Uriah Faber is handled, at the way Frankie Edgar is handled. I get that. But these are people that have, you know, given their entire lives to the organization, and sometimes they get a little bit more slack on decisions like this. But to me, Petr Yan's win over Uriah Faber should have cinched that number one contendership for him. And I get it. He doesn't have a huge following. He doesn't speak English very well, although he did take the time to get on the mic and call Cejudo triple clown. All right, good for him, man. He's trying, right? I'm sure our good buddy, his manager, Danny Rubenstein, probably had some help, you know, come giving the guy some strategy. But, hey, man, when you're teaching somebody to say something in a second language, you know, they need a little outside influence. No problem for me. But that performance, to me, should have cinched the number one contender spot for him. And I don't blame Cejudo for shooting for the biggest name possible. And, of course, the UFC, they're going to do what generates the most money. So I understand why Dana said he was open to it. But it just doesn't make sense to me. Petr Yan, to me, is the number one contender. And he deserves. And listen, Aljamain Sterling's not too far behind. Aljamain Sterling deserves a lot of love, too. He's just been on the sidelines for a little bit. So I think he lost a little bit of momentum. Meanwhile, you know, Yan has been shooting up the ranks, staying busy, fighting frequently, and fighting bigger and bigger names. And to me, I think this was deserving. I mean, the wins that he has are impressive. You know, Jimmy Rivera and John Dodson before this, I mean, say what you will about Uriah Faber, but look, when he came back, he made handy work of Ricky Simone. So I just, no disrespect to Aldo, no disrespect to Cejudo, but, hey, man, to me, I get it was a close split decision, but for a champ to reach out and fight somebody coming off a loss, I understand the motives. It's all about money and reputation, but to me, Petr Yan should be the next challenger. Uriah Faber, meanwhile, Dana did kind of touch on, you know, potential retirement for him. And it wasn't disrespectful, but there is a point to be made there, and I think it's one that Uriah is going to have to discuss as well. I mean, Uriah Faber told us before the fight he came in because he wanted a shot at the title, not because he needs a paycheck, not because he needs to make some money. I mean, he's put money in the bank. The guy was always very intelligent in the way he handled his career financially, and he still makes money off businesses that he's established. So from my understanding, he doesn't need to work. But, you know, he loves the competition. This is all he's done his entire life, and I get that. But when you lose to the top-ranked up-and-comers, you know, now you got to kind of start again. I mean, Uriah Faber can still beat a lot of people in this division, but if you're not chasing the belt, what are you doing? And I think Faber might even agree with that. So I have no problem if he wants to stick around and take a couple fights. Like I said, when he came back, you know, and I even asked him this week, you know, didn't you envision more of a victory tour type comeback? I mean, you know, you're fighting guys more your age. Instead, they're putting you against these young killers. And he said, hell no. I wanted to fight the young killers and prove it. You know what I mean? Like, I still want it. And that's awesome. That's the kind of guy Uriah Faber is. But if he wants to say, man, give me a couple more, but give me some guys a little closer to my age, you know, maybe it's not towards the rankings, I have no problem with it whatsoever. But I think, as Dana mentioned, it's a conversation him and Uriah are going to have. You know, what are you doing it for? If you don't need to be here and you know you're not chasing a belt, what are you doing here? So that'll be a discussion we had. In the meantime, it's not like it's going to be the end of the world if it's Cejudo Aldo. I mean, cool, it's two big names. It will absolutely draw more attention than Cejudo Peter Yan. I will grant you that. So from a business perspective, it's not a bad idea. I just don't like it. I don't like it. Give the guy a chance. Give Peter Yan a chance. He made his way up the list. Jeff Neal picked up the big win over Mike Perry. Man, Jeff Neal looked phenomenal here, man. The Fortis MMA product continues to get better. You know, called out Mike Perry just because he knew it'd be a fun fight, he said. Then afterwards, he said, listen, I knew the strategy exactly. We knew he drops his hand a little bit when he loads up, so the kick was going to be there. It was. And then he finished it off with punches. 90 seconds for Jeff Neal. Man, that guy is definitely a name to watch. And, of course, making my hometown of Dallas proud. Fortis MMA doing big things out there. Much respect. We mentioned Rene Aldana. Fantastic finish there. Omari Akhmadov defeated Ian Heinisch. Not the most exciting fight of all time, but Omari Akhmadov is just a tough out, man. It really is. Matt Brown got the knockout win over Ben Saunders. Man, that's another one. Ben Saunders, it's a tough call for him too, man. That guy's been around the game forever. He's had some wars. I think if you're an old school fan, he has your respect. But his chin's not there, man. And when he gets touched, man, it shows. And Matt Brown took advantage of that. And he wobbled him on the feet, and then he knocked him out on the ground. I think it was clear. You know, and it has been that Ben Saunders doesn't have the chin anymore, man. But the guy still is a martial artist. He's as passionate about the sport as he ever has been. He's a fan of the sport. He loves it. He moved out to Las Vegas to take advantage of the PI, to work with the 10th Planet crew that's out here in Vegas. And he's still chasing after it. So, you know, I'd hate to think this is the end for Ben Saunders. It wouldn't shock me, though. Man, you know, he did his best to work the rubber guard. He basically pulled guard in both rounds and couldn't get anything done off his back and then suffered the knockout loss. So it's going to be a tough next move for Ben Saunders for sure. Meanwhile, Matt Brown, man, who doesn't like watching Matt Brown fight? And here he is, the comeback after 2 years away. Chase Hooper, man, the big TKO win. The 20-year-old, I believe the nickname has been changed from the Teenage Dream to just the Dream. But Chase Hooper is phenomenal, man. The kid is 20. He looks like he's 12. He's got just nasty submissions. Couldn't get any submissions, but was able to get, you know, a mounted triangle and then just unleashed with elbows and punches. Cut open Daniel Tamer. Got the win there. Chase Hooper scares me a little bit. He gets tagged every single time he fights. If you've watched him during his run through his developmental deal, he gets hit hard every single time he fights. But he's gritty. He shows toughness. He finds a way to win. And he's got this just next level grappling capability. So he's definitely somebody to watch. He's fun. You know, afterwards, he said he was going to the M&M factory to get some customized M&Ms. I mean, how do you not love that? And how do you not love Ben Askren taking to social media and saying, good job, son. You know, and then I didn't see the original, but I saw somebody put it in our chat. I think Chase Hooper hit him back and was like, you know, thanks, Dad. Like, we're, you know, I said I didn't like wrestling. I never saw you again. Where have you been? So, I mean, good banter between those two. But Chase Hooper's fun, man. He's somebody to watch. We've been talking about him since he was on the Contender Series. We've watched his developmental deal fights. He's somebody to watch. It just scares me because he gets hit every single time. He finds a way to win, but he gets hit every single time. That's tough. You don't want to do that for long at the UFC level, especially. Brandon Moreno. My God, how good did Brandon Moreno look defeating Kai Kara-France? Both these guys, phenomenal fight here. Really, really was a phenomenal fight. Early fight of the night contender for sure. Kai Kara-France will still have a future in this flyweight division, but Brandon Moreno, my God, did he look good, man. Just just relentless, aggressive. I mean, he is so fun to talk to, and he's so fun to watch fight now as well. So Brandon Moreno, you know, outside of the UFC for a while, and has come back with an absolute vengeance. Jessica Eye, the decision win over Vivian Araújo. Fought well, you know, seemed to gain confidence, gain steam as she went along. But it has to be said, I mean, I don't want to harp on it or you know, beat her up over it. But 5 pounds, man, that's a big, big miss. That is a big, big miss. And so it sucks because, you know, I thought Vivian Araújo had a real chance of being kind of a newcomer of the year type of fighter coming in. I mean, she came in with a big KO, already picked up one win over a ranked fighter. This would have been her second one. Didn't work out for her. But, man, you know, the weight miss by Jess Guy, 5 pounds, that's a huge asterisk next to that. So I don't want to take away from her performance here, but you have to be honest, that's not good. And then, of course, Puna Soriano, just a vicious knockout. In my rookie report, you know, I did say, listen, there are a couple things that I would like to see different out of him. You know, he put himself in trouble. He hurt Oscar early, and then he went down to the ground, which I think is the one place he probably didn't want to be. So I think he was rushing a little bit there, and I think, you know, tactically moving forward, he'll want to be a little bit more patient. He did seem, not to gasp, but I think the adrenaline dump got to him. I think that's understandable in a long-awaited UFC debut, a much-anticipated UFC debut. But those are some things I would want to change moving forward, you know, just a little bit more patient, don't rush things, so, you know, and hopefully that'll address that cardio as well. So, good card. Like I said, if you watch this thing start to finish, I think you really enjoyed it. If you only watch the main card, I could see you thinking maybe, it was okay. But, of course, man, the stakes that were on the line in those three championship fights and then the two kind of legends fights as well, I think made it intriguing even if those five fights weren't the greatest fights you've ever seen. So that'll wrap it up. I am staying home this week, but I will be on Busan, South Korea duty. So Matt Erickson is making the trip out to Honolulu, Hawaii. So we'll have coverage on the ground out there from the two Bellator events. He'll be handling that. I will be waking up super early on Saturday morning to help. It'll be myself. It'll be Simon Head, who travels back to the UK tonight. And Farah Hanoun as well. She's over in Egypt. She'll be helping me out. So it'll be the three of us on South Korea duty. So we will have live coverage on the site, although we will be doing it from home. But we will have that card covered live if you're interested in that. And then, of course, Matt Erickson will be in Honolulu all week long. So he'll be covering that. I actually did find out the week after. I thought I was home for the rest of the year. I did find out we made a late call that we're going to go to cover Bellator 237. So I am leaving on Christmas Day to go cover Bellator 237 in Tokyo. I guess we had a couple extra bucks in the budget at the end of the year. And anybody that works for a big corporation knows how that goes. You don't spend it, you ain't getting it back. So I'm going to make the trip out to Tokyo, leaving on Christmas Day. Obviously, my family's a little annoyed at me with that. But fortunately, for my wife, Christmas Eve is always the bigger day. So I'll have to make sure and do something special on Christmas Eve and then sneak out the door on Christmas Day. But I will be back. Luckily, it's just a quick trip. I'm not staying for the Ryzen show as well. I wouldn't have hated it, to be honest with you. It'd be kind of fun. Being back home is not the worst thing ever either. So anyway, that's what we got teed up in the next 2 weeks. Sorry I'm a little bit late on this. Like I said, it was just so exhausted last night. But still wanted to get and talk about this big card. Hopefully it still made it to you in time to enjoy. And let me just say thanks for listening. We'll be right back.